When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey guys, before we start the show, if you're not a RedPilledAmerica.com subscriber, what are you waiting for? We need your support. We don't have the government funding us like NPR. All we have is you. Become an RPA FamBam member by going to RedPilledAmerica.com and clicking join in the top menu.
Support a show devoted to the truth and that shares your values. RedPilledAmerica.com.
Global warming has been politicized since Al Gore's 2006 documentary, An Inconvenient Truth.
Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro.
A mere 2 years after the film's launch, the issue was so hot, candidate Obama was running on his ability to change sea levels.
This was the moment when the rise of the oceans began to slow and our planet began to heal.
In his run for the White House, Donald Trump would make his own remarks about climate change.
A lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax.
The far-left media would eventually lock in on Trump's hoax comment.
President Trump believes climate change is a hoax.
Yes or no? Does the president believe that climate change is real?
Does the president believe today that climate change is a hoax?
Shouldn't you be able to tell the American people whether or not the president still believes that climate change is a hoax?
What does the president actually believe about climate change? Does he still believe it's a hoax?
Obama thinks he's the god Poseidon, and the media is silent. Trump thinks some global warming claims are deceptive, the media pounces. But Trump's statement did raise a question that the media would never probe. Namely, why do so many people think global warming is a hoax? I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We are all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You could think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth.
Welcome to Red Pilled America.
Global warming is one of those topics, like abortion and gun control, that has become hopelessly politicized. The left has an almost religious belief in it, and when anyone shows skepticism towards even the most extreme claims, the media labels the person a conspiracy theorist, or worse, a science denier. When Donald Trump said some of global warming was a hoax, the media was incurious as to why he would say such a thing. What could he have possibly meant? To find the answer, we're going to hear the story of how a small group of climate change skeptics battled the global warming establishment, and in the process, changed the course of the world's economy.
You can't exclude the possibility that someone from CRU was the hacker.
We were never given any information that corroborated a break-in.
He was a lone wolf partisan hacker.
And I did, you know, I shared it with the anti-terror squad.
That it probably was an insider. That's about as specific as I can get.
On a cold December night in 2007, Steve McIntyre made his way to a restaurant in downtown San Francisco. A 60-year-old, partly balding, gray-bearded Canadian, Steve couldn't have known that he was about to join the team that would force the biggest science heist in history. Visiting the Bay Area for a climate conference, Steve had recently won the award for Best Science Blog and was grabbing dinner with three locals who were regular readers of his blog, Climate Audit. He was quickly becoming a rock star amongst a group of global warming skeptics that considered themselves lukewarmers, people that believe humans could be warming the planet, but questioned the magnitude of the problem and the certainty of climate science. They weren't science deniers, as their critics would say. They were just curious. Steve fell into climate science completely by chance.
I became interested in climate in a very casual way in 2002, when Canada was discussing joining the Kyoto Treaty.
Countries that joined the Kyoto Treaty had to commit to reducing their carbon dioxide emissions.
And one of the feature arguments of the Canadian government was that 1998 was the warmest year in 1,000 years. And I wondered in the most casual possible way how they knew that.
Steve wasn't a climate scientist by trade. He was a consultant on mining exploration projects. But he discussed global warming from time to time with a friend that was a geologist. And this friend told him that throughout geological history, climate was much warmer in the past than it is today.
And he viewed the climate science alarm as being more or less equivalent to creationism.
So out of curiosity, Steve read the climate studies claiming 1998 was the warmest year. The reports weren't foreign to him. Steve was accustomed to reading technical papers for risky mining explorations. When he reviewed the documents, a specific diagram stood out.
And I was struck by the care with which they had made the diagram. When you're trying to raise money, having good diagrams is important. And I noticed that there was attention to the graphics. So there was a promotional element to it, which caught my eye.
The diagram had a distinctive shape. Picture a hockey stick placed flat on the ground, with just the blade of the hockey stick pointing up to the sky. That's what this global warming diagram looked like. The flat shaft part of the stick represented temperature changes over the past 1,000 years, which looked pretty constant over time, until the 1900s, when the graph dramatically shot up, like the blade of the hockey stick. This hockey stick graph was originally created by American climate scientist Michael Mann, with several of his colleagues. One of the papers introducing the graph was titled Northern Hemisphere Temperatures During the Past Millennium. But it was the subtitle that was the most noteworthy. It read, Inferences, Uncertainties, and Limitations. Given the admitted uncertainties expressed in the subtitle, it's hard to believe the hockey stick graph would become the poster child of certainty of global warming. But it would become just that. Pay close attention here, because if you could understand what I'm about to say, you'll know more about climate science than 99% of the people in the world. This famous hockey stick graph shows the Earth's temperature variations over the past 1,000 years. The problem is, there were no thermometers 1,000 years ago all over the Earth to capture the temperatures. In fact, it isn't until the late 1800s that we have any thermometer-based record of temperatures around the world. So to fill in Earth's temperatures before this time, before the 1800s, some climate scientists turned to trees. These scientists believe that some old trees record past temperatures in their growth pattern. Picture cutting a cross-section of a tree and looking at that cross-section. What you see are tree rings, right? Those are the concentric circles that start small in the center of the cross-section, then get larger and larger as they reach the surface of the tree trunk. You can typically estimate the age of a tree by analyzing these tree rings. The older the tree, the more tree rings it has. We're all pretty familiar with that concept. But some climate scientists believe that you can go even further and calculate the temperature from year to year using these tree rings. Simplistically speaking, the more growth of a tree ring, the hotter the temperature, basically providing a picture of past temperatures when thermometers weren't around. So some climate scientists use these tree rings to calculate and find the temperatures all across the world before the 1800s. What was alarming about the graph was that the increase in temperature coincided closely with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, which started at about 1850. If true, the world's temperature increase could be tied directly to the beginning of humans burning fossil fuels. Theories of human-induced climate change had been around long before Michael Mann's hockey stick graph, but his diagram gave the first powerful graphical image of global warming, so powerful that the United Nations used a version of it in their 2001 climate report. This was the document that gives guidance to governments on which policies to enact to reduce the effects of global warming. The hockey stick graph became iconic and galvanized environmentalists to call for urgent government action on global warming. But as history shows, inciting one group often inspires an opposing group to rise up. So is the story of the hockey stick graph. More of Red-Pilled America after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The spring is here, and it's time to treat yourself to the Licorice Guy. You guys should know by now that I love licorice, and it doesn't get any better than the gourmet licorice made by the Licorice Guy. They have a great selection of flavors to choose from, like red, blue raspberry, black, green apple, just to name a few. The freshness of the licorice is unlike anything you've ever tasted in licorice before. Seriously, if you haven't tried licorice from the Licorice Guy, then you ain't living life right. It's time to dump that store-bought licorice that's hard enough to break your teeth and get yourself the soft, fresh stuff from the Licorice Guy. What I also love about the Licorice Guy is that it's an American family-owned business. It's made right here in the beautiful U.S. of A. We are big proponents of buying American and supporting American workers. Right now, Red Pilled America listeners get 15% off when you enter RPA15 at checkout. Visit licoriceguy.com and enter RPA15 at checkout. That's licoriceguy.com. They ship daily. Treat yourself and those you love and taste the difference. Welcome back to Red Pilled America. So the hockey stick graph galvanized the global warming community, but it also had another effect. Just as quickly as the graph was used as a rallying call for global warming activists, it gave birth to a camp of skeptics. That's where the Canadian Steve McIntyre enters the picture. The hockey stick graph confused Steve. A well-known medieval warming period, where Earth's temperatures increased considerably sometime between the year 1000 AD and 1300 AD, followed by a cooling trend known as the Little Ice Age, was widely accepted in the science community and suggested that Earth went through natural phases of warming and cooling. But these events appeared to be absent from the hockey stick. McIntyre was curious about how the graph was made, and as chance would have it, the discipline of reconstructing temperatures using tree rings, largely an exercise in statistics, fit right within his mathematics background. Steve was a math whiz in his early years.
I studied pure math at university. I mean, I had stood first in Canada in the high school math contest, in the international high school math contest, so it was a form of almost athletic activity for me.
Steve studied economics at Oxford and had been offered a PhD scholarship at both Harvard and MIT. But after his university studies, he decided to enter the private sector instead of academia.
I hadn't done any math since I was 21 or 22, but because I'd learned it well as a teenager, the comparison that I made, it's like you were a Davis Cup tennis player and going in a club tournament when you're 55. You'd be a tough out, even if you hadn't played for a long time. You could pick it up fairly quickly.
His work in mining exploration also prepared him in another way.
In the mining exploration business, there's a lot of promotion, there's a lot of crookedness, so you learn to be fairly skeptical and wary and to look at data and look at what people are saying and not necessarily believe everything you're told. And so I had an eye for promotional claims or claims that were not necessarily supported. So while I hadn't spent that time in academics, I'd spent time with tricky people and learning how to, you know, check things.
So he decided to reach out to American climate scientist Michael Mann to get his hands on the data and computer code that he used to create the hockey stick graph.
So I emailed Mann for his data, and he said that he responded promptly and said that he had forgotten where the FTP site for the data was.
An FTP site is an online location where people store data and computer files for colleagues to access over the internet.
It seemed extraordinary to me that, you know, that the data was not readily at hand, and it also seemed particularly extraordinary to me that because a 35-year-old guy whose this was his study that was his claim to fame, how he wouldn't know at his fingertips where the data was.
If the hockey stick data wasn't readily available, it told Steve something else.
What that meant to me is that nobody had audited the data.
This was stunning to Steve. The UN was using the hockey stick graph to argue a reconfiguration of the entire world's economy. Steve couldn't understand how such important data was not readily available and seemingly not being reviewed with a skeptical eye.
And I thought, well, if none of them have audited it, I will. The image that I put was, well, I'll try to figure out what man did, and I viewed it as trying to solve a big crossword puzzle.
The decision wasn't a political one for Steve. At the time, he considered himself a Bill Clinton Democrat. He was just curious and had some time on his hands. Michael Mann's associate eventually got Steve a version of the data that created his hockey stick, and once Steve began reviewing it, he thought he saw some red flags.
I started looking at some of the data and wasn't entirely clear where the shape of the hockey stick came from.
He became suspicious that they were possibly cherry-picking the temperature data so that a hockey stick would result no matter what data was entered into the climate model. To test his theory, he input random data, called Red Noise into a climate model, and out popped a hockey stick graph. Steve began posting some of his analysis in skeptic chat groups online. His work immediately stood out because his analysis was not based on emotion. Instead, it was data-driven, and he learned something surprising about the people that liked his work.
A lot of skeptics, I guess, would be people like me who felt that climate was an issue, but were concerned that it was being oversold as an issue.
His posts led to a small science journal asking him to write an article. He'd never written an academic paper before, so he teamed up with an academic he met in the skeptic chat rooms. That person was Ross McKittrick, an environmental economist and a PhD in economics who'd authored a book skeptical about global warming. The two worked on papers evaluating Michael Mann's original hockey stick graph, highlighting what they saw as his errors in using the data. In 2004, some of their findings forced Michael Mann and his colleagues to publish corrections to their original hockey stick paper. However, they didn't change any of their underlying results. But the skeptics' work drew blood. So climate scientists started a blog called Real Climate to debunk their detractors.
They begin their existence with a series of blogs slagging me. Somebody who was following it sent me an email and said, you know, if you think you can win your disputes in sort of academic journals, you're getting killed.
Steve had a pretty amateurish website at the time.
So somebody set up a proposed the name Climate Audit and proposed that I start a blog. And so he arranged to start up the blog, you know, to kind of get it set up for me. And I started writing and found that I liked it.
These dueling websites began a daily online battle between climate scientists and global warming skeptics. One of the main contention points between these two camps has been a concept known as divergence. Some climate scientists noticed a problem using tree rings to calculate today's temperatures. What they found was that some tree rings showed a decrease in temperatures starting at around 1961, while actual thermometer readings showed a temperature increase. The science and the thermometers weren't matching up. So what the climate scientists did in some of the hockey stick graphs was delete the tree ring temperatures after 1961 to hide the tree ring decline in temperatures, replacing them with the actual thermometer temperatures. Their rationale was that the tree rings weren't capturing today's higher temperatures. The skeptics thought this was bad science. And why? Because it raised the question that if the tree rings aren't recording the higher temperatures of today, couldn't tree rings have also missed higher temperatures in the past as well? Today's spike in temperatures could have also been there 1,000 years ago, meaning today's high temperatures weren't unprecedented. This divergence appeared to show a serious problem with some of the science behind the hockey stick graphs. Steve McIntyre asked Michael Mann to provide more of the data and computer codes used to create his hockey stick graphs. But by then, Michael Mann had completely cut Steve off. Their feud began reaching the mainstream media.
The Wall Street Journal writes an article, and that catches the eye of the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
And in 2006, a series of government hearings began questioning climate science and asking if they were in fact cherry-picking data to create the hockey stick graph.
I remember Roseanne DiRico, one of the famous tree ring people, talked about cherry-picking and said, you have to pick cherries if you want to make cherry pie. And I thought that that neatly summarized the approach of the tree ring people.
In other words, it sounded like the scientists were cherry-picking the data to get the results they wanted. A hockey stick. Steve chronicled the hearings and his analysis on his blog Climate Audit, and his readership grew.
My audience was highly professional, a lot of scientists from other fields, a lot of people in finance businesses, a lot of computer programmers, business professionals, people who didn't have the time to parse the data themselves, but were interested in reading about it.
Readers like San Francisco native Steve Mosher. An open source software developer, Mosher was aligned with most of what climate scientists believed. But when he began questioning some of their work at their blog, Real Climate, he got a very negative response.
You know, and it kind of shocked me. You know, so I pushed back against that. And then at some point, they were railing about this guy at Climate Audit. And I thought, let me go look and see what this is. So I went over to Climate Audit and, you know, like he was doing math.
Mosher liked Steve McIntyre's desire for transparency in climate science and became a regular commenter on his blog. The online feud also drew in Charles Rotter, another San Francisco native.
I had sort of gotten drawn to the whole climate argument, and it really started heating up on McIntyre's site, you know, 2006, 2007, and it became fun serial drama, like an online community.
Another reader, Anthony Watts, lived just north of San Francisco. Anthony was actually a global warming activist back in the early 1990s.
I came up with this idea of promoting, doing a series of promotions to television meteorologists around the country to get their viewers to plant trees to offset CO2. And we planted about 500,000 trees because of that.
He'd spent years as a research assistant in the meteorology department at Purdue University. In 2006, he started a science blog called What's Up With That and began investigating the thermometers that were measuring global warming. And what he found shocked him. More of Red Pilled America after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How are you feeling about the current state of our country? Longtime listeners of Red Pilled America know that, since our inception, we've been warning about the dangers of giving up the culture.
Republicans abandoned storytelling, art, academia, entertainment, music, literature, the institutions that define what it means to be American, and by doing so, they allowed Marxists to pump their poison messages into the American bloodstream.
But there is a silver lining. Red Pilled America is the beginning of an antidote because we're pioneering the take back of our culture. If we succeed, others will follow, and we'll create a symphony of storytellers that restores what it means to be American.
Please consider supporting the show by visiting redpilledamerica.com and clicking support or shop in the top menu. It's time to tell our side of the story, and with your help, we will continue to blaze the trail.
Visit redpilledamerica.com to help us continue the fight. Support what you love or it goes away.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. So Anthony Watts began to investigate how temperature stations were measuring global warming. And what he found shocked him.
It really began to start taking off in 2007, and that's when I started surveying weather stations around the country. And it got quite a bit of attention, particularly from a station in Marysville, California, not too far from me, that I'd surveyed. And it was basically a thermometer right in the middle of a parking lot at the fire station. It had vehicles parking there. The fire chief parked his vehicle in a special parking space right next to the thermometer, where the grill of the fire chief's truck was right up against the thermometer a couple feet away. And there were the city had rented out space for a cell phone tower, and there was these two equipment sheds blowing hot air from the air conditioning vents all in this area.
And this particular thermometer had been showing that Maryville's temperature had been increasing off the charts.
And it was just zoom off the scale. And I looked at nearby stations, and the similar trend wasn't there. And it was just another light bulb moment for me. It's like, wow, this is where climate science is measuring data, and they consider this accurate? And I put that out, and I got picked up by Steve McIntyre at Climate Audit.
Anthony and the two other Bay Area natives, Mosher and Charles, became friendly with Steve McIntyre through his Climate Audit blog. Mosher remembers how he met the guys for the first time.
At one point, McIntyre mentions that he's going to be coming to San Francisco. And one of the people on the site ends up being Charles Rotter. His nickname was Cheese. And he says, oh, if you're coming to San Francisco, Steve McIntyre, why don't we get together for dinner? And so I chimed in and I said, like, heck, I'll join you, because Anthony showed up as well.
We had been talking online, and we decided to meet up. And so we met at a restaurant in downtown San Francisco in 2007 in December. And that's where this friendship and partnership was formed out of that.
Little did any of them know how pivotal that dinner would be. Anthony told the table that his skeptic blog, What's Up With That, was growing faster than he could handle. Charles offered his help.
And I basically told him that I had tons of experience moderating, you know, back from my own site days. I also had lots of time in my hands and worked from home, and I would be happy to give him help moderating.
Anthony took him up on his offer. Charles and Mosher hit it off as well and would become roommates. These four and the many commenters on their blogs would meticulously audit the work of climate scientists. The feud between the two camps had been reaching epic proportions, even spilling into Capitol Hill. But what escalated the conflict further was something basic in science: verification of results. The climate scientists refused to allow the skeptics access to their work so that they could review it. Steve McIntyre would ask for the data and computer code used to create the hockey stick graphs, but at every turn the climate scientists would stonewall his requests. With Michael Mann completely cutting him off, Steve looked to audit the graphs of a different hockey stick team, the climate scientist at the University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit, known by its acronym CRU. When politics enters science, the results can only be trusted when qualified people with a skeptical eye verifies the work. By this time, Steve McIntyre was a published author on the topic of hockey stick graphs. He'd even become a reviewer on the UN's Mother of All Global Warming Reports. None of that mattered. CRU rejected his request for data, claiming that they had confidentiality agreements with the countries that provided them temperature data, and those agreements prohibited them from giving out that information. But Steve discovered that CRU had given their data to another institution, which typically nullifies a confidentiality agreement. So Steve told them that they should be free to give him the data, but CRU figured out another way to reject him.
So they responded that their confidentiality agreements prevented them from giving the data to a non-academic. Why would some agreement 25 years earlier include a term like that? That was just a fabrication. And, you know, it's that kind of fabrication by the climate community that really undercuts a lot of their claims on other topics, because that's something that's easily checked, people understand. And so if they're lying about something like that, what else are they lying about?
So Steve got an idea. Both the UK and the United States enacted Freedom of Information Acts, known by their acronyms as FOIs or FOIAs. These laws provide access to information that was created using tax dollars. Steve decided to use these laws to get what he wanted. He submitted FOI requests to climate researchers asking for the confidentiality agreements they claimed to have with five different countries. Then he turned to his blog audience.
And then I posted up my letter and asked readers to send in FOI requests for other countries. I viewed it more as sort of a letter writing campaign, that if it was just me asking for it, they would just say, oh, well, that's McIntyre, he's crazy. Whereas if, you know, they got 50 letters, that they would then sort of have to, they would then have to reconsider what they were doing, and maybe they'd give it out after all. I probably underestimated their stubbornness on this.
CRU rejected his requests again. But all these attempts at trying to get the data sent Steve McIntyre's climate audit readers on a hunting expedition. You see, Steve had been taking these readers on a journey, slowly teaching his audience all along the way about the uncertainties in climate science, journaling the specific data he was being refused. Their stonewalling riled up his audience. Getting the data became a game of capture the flag. At the time of the rejection, many readers began to learn that CRU had an online data storage location, an FTP site, and they began rummaging through them to see if they could find the data that they were refusing to give Steve.
And I remember a couple of them saying that they fell into, you know, areas of the CRU website that were unexpected.
Steve's readers were actually finding themselves in private areas on the climate researcher's website. Their data appeared vulnerable, the vulnerability that would change the course of the world's economy.
Sometimes you're so busy defending the front door, you forget the back door is open.
At about 5 p.m. on November 17, 2009, Mosher was heading home from a coffee shop when he got a call.
Charles and I lived south of Market on 4th Street. And I was over in the marina on the other side of San Francisco. I was there having coffee with friends. So I'm headed home, and I got into a cab to go back to Soma. And Charles calls me, and he says, like, where are you? And I said, well, I'm over in the marina. I'm headed back to the apartment. What's up? And he says, well, you got to get here.
Since meeting at dinner in San Francisco 2 years earlier, Charles had become the primary comment moderator at Anthony Watt's skeptic blog, What's Up With That?
You know, and I was keeping odd hours, so I might sleep for 3 hours and not sleep for 3 hours, but I was constantly online approving comments, making flippant comments.
That afternoon, he came across a comment on the site that stood out. A commenter named Foya posted a link to a Russian server with text that appeared to be snippets of emails. At the time, Anthony Watts was out of the country.
I was in Belgium at the time. I was at the headquarters for the European Union, and I was there to give a presentation along with some other climate skeptics.
So Charles was manning the site on his own. The comment looked weird, so he blocked it from going public and went to the Russian link to see what it was. It was a zip file of what appeared to be documents and emails from CRU, the Climate Research Unit. When he reviewed the contents, his first thought was,
holy s***, was what was going through my mind. It was a real treasure trove of showing what, you know, was essentially just activist science operating. Not objective, not reasonable. I'm not going to call it completely fraudulent or hoax, but it was like activist scientists, as we're now experienced with activist journalism. Yes, people are still telling facts, but they're doing it from such a skewed perspective that you might as well call it lies. It was the cause. They were actually saying that if some of this stuff, you know, if this guy says this, it's not going to be helpful to the cause. That's not scientific inquiry.
This was a highly sensitive situation. The files were likely either leaked by an insider or stolen, or perhaps something even more problematic. Charles contacted Anthony to get some direction.
And this came in an email to me from Charles Rotter. You need to look at this. And he told me in the email what was going on. And I got on the phone with him. And this was a couple hours before I was supposed to go into the EU. And I had been forewarned about security, and I'm going to be searched, and all this stuff. And so in seeing what Charles had and then actually downloading it and looking at it briefly myself, and then looking at the timing of it all, I'm thinking to myself, why now? Why right before I'm supposed to go into the EU and go through security? And so my concern was is that somehow I was being set up. I didn't know.
And we were very worried that this was a setup because Anthony at this point was getting a lot of notoriety. And who knows what kind of data theft and libel laws and things existed in Europe that they could nail Anthony on if he was found with this thing.
All of a sudden, I had in my possession on my laptop over there in Belgium these very sensitive files, and I was going to go into this big security test here in a couple hours. And so my thought was, I need to divest myself of this file. And I purchased a professional file eraser, and I told Charles that under no circumstances are you to release this on the blog or anything, because I need to get back into the United States, and I don't want to be listed as someone who's been involved in some kind of industrial espionage or anything like that. And so he agreed to that.
Charles had strict direction not to publish the files, but was given the okay to talk about them with two people, the other two from their San Francisco dinner 2 years earlier, Mosher and Steve McIntyre.
And so I also called my roommate, Stephen Mosher.
Mosher was fully versed in the raging feud between the skeptics and climate scientists over the access to data and code. And he was the only person that could authenticate the contents without Charles losing control of the files.
And so what he told me is he got this link in this comment. And so he told me he downloaded the contents. And so Charles said Anthony wanted me to look at it. But he was concerned that someone had put it on his site to trap him, essentially, and that it was fake.
When Mosher walked in the door, Charles was waiting for him and made him a CD of the files.
By that point, I'd already done all the virus scans and Trojan scans and made sure it was clean.
So I took the CD and I put it on my, at that point I had an Apple computer, and I had and I sat on the couch and I started reading. And I didn't stop reading, and I didn't move, and I didn't eat, and I just read everything.
What was in the leaked documents was shocking. Climate scientists massaging data and appearing to pressure colleagues to change their results so they wouldn't give ammunition to skeptics. Climate scientists appearing to collude to delete emails, withhold data, and limit the scientific review of their work, and stunning admissions of doubt and uncertainty in their methods. As Joe Biden would say, this was a big f***ing deal. Mosher, Charles, and Anthony all thought that they were the only people that had the file, so they felt they had some time to think about what to do next. And anyways, they couldn't do anything with the files until Anthony was back on American soil. So their first mission was to figure out if the files were authentic. As they combed through the documents in those first few hours, they noticed climate scientists had forwarded emails from Steve McIntyre. So they got on the phone with Steve.
Mosher calls me because he sees some emails from me in it, and nobody knows at the beginning whether it's real or not. And so he said, he called me, you know, are those your emails? And I confirmed their authenticity.
Now they knew that some of the emails were definitely real, but they weren't sure that they were all real. Mosher went nonstop reading the emails for the next day, spending hours on the phone with Steve McIntyre trying to confirm their authenticity. Then they got a break. A professor at the University of East Anglia emailed Steve McIntyre asking if he knew anything about a hack of their climate research unit.
You know, he said there's some big lockdown at the university.
This was the sign they needed. The files were real, but they couldn't go public yet. Anthony Watts was still not on American soil. Mosher was chomping at the bit to go live. Charles had to hold the line.
Yeah, I was just calmly making coffee in the kitchen and just telling him that if this is important as we think it is, 2 or 3 days is not going to matter.
With Anthony now in a flight pattern heading for Dulles International Airport in Virginia, Mosher had been reading the emails for almost 2 days straight. That's when they got an idea, to search the internet to see if the hacker posted the Russian link anywhere else.
And at that point, I think Charles started looking. And he found the same link. When you search for that link, like he found that it Jeff's.
Jeff Condon, an aeronautical engineer, had started a lukewarmer site called the Air Vent a little over a year earlier. He began the blog to translate some of Steve McIntyre's climate analysis for a non-technical audience. Jeff, like the rest of the lukewarmers, believed that transparency in climate science was key.
The whole purpose of our climate blogs was to put everything in the open where people can see the information. And there was some efforts on the science community not to allow access.
This belief made his website a trigger for the bombshell. The hacker came to be known as Mr. Foya. The first time we could see him infiltrate CRU's data server was on September 16, 2009, just a few weeks after the Climate Research Unit denied Steve McIntyre's request for their confidentiality agreements. Mr. Foya infiltrated CRU's servers again on September 28th, then September 29th and September 30th. He was grabbing documents related to the hockey stick graph. Mr. Foya infiltrated again on October 1st, then again on October 2nd and October 3rd. He appeared to be looking for something. But what?
Wonder what it was? It was an interesting one.
What was it?
It was the data that had been the topic of the fight about years before that man had refused to provide me.
The infiltrator found it on November 16th. It would be a matter of hours before the files hit the web. The next day, Mr. Foya gained access to the climate scientist blog, Real Climate, locked out all other users, and uploaded the stolen CRU files to their site. Mr. Foya then went to Steve McIntyre's blog and posted a comment with a link to the file he'd just uploaded and included the text, quote, "A miracle just happened." This guy was a prankster with balls. The administrator of Real Climate quickly regained access to the blog and deleted the file from public view. With the link to the stolen files now gone, Mr. Foya went another route to leak the files. He uploaded the files to a Russian server, then posted a link to the files on both Anthony Watt's blog What's Up With That and Jeff Condon's The Air Vent. As we already know, the comment on What's Up With That was held in moderation. Jeff Condon, however, had a different philosophy for his site.
Okay, so in the spirit of openness, I mean, The Air Vent was a site where I literally didn't do any moderation. I would let any comment go on the site. And so if somebody dropped a comment on there, it was immediately visible to any reader.
At the time that Mr. Foya posted a link to the stolen files on his website, Jeff was practically as far away from the heat of the climate debate as you can be.
Yeah, I was out in the deep woods hunting deer up north in Michigan, where there was actually no phone service, no cell phone service, no internet.
The link to the stolen files sat in his comment section for 2 days while Jeff was in the middle of nowhere. So when Charles told Mosher he found a link to the files on Jeff's site, the game changed for Mosher. He reached out to Anthony Watts, who is now in line at U.S. Customs.
By this point, then I said, hey, the cat's out of the bag. So I went to Anthony and I said, like, hey, I promised you that I would not post them anywhere or send them to anyone, show them to anyone. But now that we know that your place is not the only place, you know, like, our agreement's off.
Mosher began posting excerpts of the emails at a small skeptic site, and the lukewarmer community started buzzing. The biggest story in global warming history was about to break.
I'm in line to go through customs, and I'm getting text messages from Charles and Stephen Mosher and from Steve McIntyre, and they're starting to talk about this. And I remember saying back to McIntyre, the whole thing's got to be a hoax. And that was just sort of a preemptive, in case somebody grabbed my phone, it didn't look complicit, you know. And so I got through customs, and once I got through customs and I'm back on U.S. soil, the first thing I did was find Wi-Fi, sat down, and I wrote the story. And I wrote the story sitting on the floor at Dulles Airport, waiting for my gate flight to depart. I heard them saying last call for boarding, and I hit send and publish, and I'm running for the door. I got on the plane, and then I had a 4-5 hour flight back to Sacramento, California. And that was a time when there was no Wi-Fi on airplanes, and so it was kind of a what have I done kind of a moment.
With the biggest skeptic blog in the world now covering the story, it went viral. A reader on What's Up With That dubbed the scandal Climategate. The name stuck. It was a bombshell.
Climategate, they're calling it, a new scandal over global warming, and it's burning up the internet. Have the books been cooked on climate change?
hot topic. Did scientists skew their research to support theories about global warming?
Because this is a worldwide hoax, and its primary target was you, the people of the United States of America.
Now we find out that this institute, was hiding from the people of Great Britain and the world, that in fact climate change is a hoax, something I've been saying for a long time.
Those who doubt that man-made greenhouse gases are changing the climate say these emails from Britain's University of East Anglia show climate scientists massaging data and suppressing studies by those who disagree.
One of the most damning email exchanges credits man with a trick to hide the decline in temperatures. In another, the head of the National Center for Atmospheric Research writes a colleague, "The fact is we can't account for the lack of warming at the moment, and it is a travesty that we can't."
The scandal even reached into pop culture, hitting the news desk of Jon Stewart.
"I've just completed Mike's nature trick of adding in the real temps to each series for the last 20 years, i.e. from 1981 onwards, and from 1961 for Keith's, to hide the decline."
See, it's nothing. He was just using a trick to hide the decline. It's just scientists speak for using a standard statistical technique, recalibrating data in order to trick you into not knowing about the decline.
The leaked documents didn't debunk human-caused global warming, but ClimateGate did uncover serious issues with climate science. Its bias, its attempt to avoid scrutiny, its refusal to show its work to skeptics, its odd massaging of data, and the uncertainties of the hockey stick graph. This could all be seen in the emails. Mr. Foya, the leaker of the files, was never caught. UK law enforcement closed its case after 2.5 years with no suspects. Apparently, Mr. Foya wiped his trace clean. For a brief moment, it appeared change was coming. Global warming media chastised the scientists involved in the scandal and called for a new transparency in their work. A few climate scientists even became skeptics, including Dr. Judith Curry.
"I thank the chairman and the ranking members for the opportunity to offer testimony today. Prior to 2009, I felt that supporting the IPCC consensus on climate change was a responsible thing to do. I bought into the argument, don't trust what one scientist says, trust what an international team of 1,000 scientists has said after years of careful deliberation. That all changed for me in November 2009, following the leaked ClimateGate emails that illustrated the sausage-making and even bullying that went into building the consensus."
But the calls for reform didn't last.
The establishment managed to put up all its defenses. Then slowly the establishment crushed it. And
several investigations concluded, largely exonerating the climate scientists. After all was done, they proceeded to go right back to the practices that led to the leak in the first place.
The climate scientist community has become sort of angrier as a result of it. Afterwards, they doubled down in becoming even more insular. Their reaction was not to blame themselves for their language, but they blame skeptics for sort of putting pressure on them, which caused them to write badly. I mean, I thought that the people ought to have disowned the practice of deleting data to hide the decline, but they didn't do that. They blame skeptics for, you know, asking questions.
Climate scientists returned to calling skeptics science deniers, a label meant to marginalize lukewarmers like Anthony Watts, because the truth of their position is harder to combat.
"I believe that carbon dioxide does have an effect on the temperature of the Earth. The only real scientific question is how much, and that question has been in flux and unanswered for over 30 years. It hasn't been nailed down. How much temperature increase do we get for a doubling of CO2 in Earth's atmosphere? And the estimates range in science anywhere from 0.5 degree up to 8 degrees. There's no actual number where everyone can say, this is it, this is the right number. They've not nailed that down in 30 some years of climate science. And with something that uncertain, how do you plan for the future? How do you say we're in a crisis or not? And that is the big question. And so, yes, I believe carbon dioxide has some effect. How much is still a question."
We Which brings us back to the question, why do so many people think global warming is a hoax? The answer is ClimateGate.
They probably see the email that was sent a couple of months ago by one of the leaders of Global Warming, the initiative, and, you know, almost saying, I guess they're saying it's a con.
The hockey stick was considered to be gospel, even with its scientific uncertainties. It was then used as a weapon to try and punish the U.S. while leaving the biggest polluters unscathed. To some, that might look a lot like a hoax, and it was all stopped by a tiny collective of bloggers. What this small group of skeptics did was absolutely incredible. The global warming establishment's resistance to their constant auditing forced the release of the ClimateGate files. The message that those files delivered eventually planted a seed in the mind of Citizen Trump that ultimately blossomed into him withdrawing from the Paris Accord once elected. That decision altered the course of the world's economy, and it could all be tracked back to a few lukewarmers. That's how big ClimateGate was. But you don't have to take my word for it. Believe Trump's own words just a few months after ClimateGate broke.
I think that the memorandum or whatever it was that they found a few months ago was devastating by the leaders of the movement of global warming. I think that was devastating because that basically said, you people are a bunch of jerks to follow us and we're just kidding.
Red Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's produced by me, Adriana Cortez, and Patrick Carelci for Inform Ventures. Now, our entire archive of episodes is only available to our Backstage subscribers. To subscribe, visit redpilledamerica.com and click support in the top menu. Thanks for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.